Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast, with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
There he is. This is the second time we started the show because I did... What would you describe the noise I made during the...
It was like you were engaged in warrior nun activities, like kung fu or something.
Right. Okay. Not what I was expecting you to say. I thought you were going to say... Because I thought it sounded like the noise someone would make if they accidentally sat with their trousers down on a... like on a stove, like a hot stove.
It was a bit like that, but it sort of had a cartoonish kind of sound to it.
Kate in our live chat says it was quite Partridge-esque, Alan Partridge-esque.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It was a bit that. Well, we shouldn't go on about it because no one's going to hear it, right?
Well, I'll probably...
Are we going to put it at the end?
I mean, now I'm going to have to put it in at the end of the show for the patrons on the extended version because we include outtakes at the end every week, and that's probably now quite an appropriate one. But anyway, I wanted to say something. Which is that
yes.
We put out an extra message earlier in the week where I rambled through a forest and rambled into a microphone about how I was trying to fix my PC. First time I've had to really fix a PC in quite some time. And while I was walking, I said, I think it's going to be a problem with the RAM. I think it is. And I was correct. And I had
It almost always is the RAM.
Bad stick of RAM. And I managed to fix that RAM, and I've now got 16 brand new gigabytes of RAM in my PC, my gaming computer, and it's working like a charm. So just to bookend that, for those of you who heard that, it worked. And of course, if you want to go and listen to it, go and get Extra Message and hear me explain the background to that.
You seem to have a problem with that PC of yours, because the last time, wasn't it, that you needed to put more... thermal compound on the CPU, didn't you? It was overheating.
That's right.
To remember.
But believe it or not,
because I said to you,
yeah, believe it or not, that was about 5 years ago.
Good grief!
Yeah.
How time flies when you're having two computer problems.
Exactly. And I did touch on that in Extra Message that I had to once reseat the heatsink with some fresh thermal paste.
Did you give me any credit for coming up with the idea? I think it was me that suggested
it
that,
was,
wasn't it?
It was your idea, but I'll be absolutely honest. I took full credit for it in the podcast.
I knew it. The next Extra Message, everyone, is going to be me telling everyone how that was my idea.
Ian's,
for 15 minutes.
Ian is up for Extra Message next and is due to deliver his episode next week, so maybe it'll come into
and
it.
And given how little there is to talk about at the moment, it's going to be a bit of a challenge.
You've applied the yeast to this cake explanation here, in that you've raised something quite important, which is that this week's news in the tech world has been basically two things in the mainstream. One, I mean, I'm discounting the implosion of Facebook to a certain extent, has been what's going on with Twitter/Elon Musk, and what has been going on with FTX and the crypto implosion of that.
And we
exchange.
Don't do crypto, so
we're not talking
out.
About either of those things, not directly at least, because, I mean, frankly, who wants to hear us talk about that? I certainly don't want to talk about it because I spent all weekend reading and writing about it. But the drought of news has meant that we had to sort of dig deep into our news bag. And I did think that we've been thinking a lot about social media over the last couple of weeks, and what's been happening with Twitter has made me reflect on what I consider social media to be, but also what I consider a valuable social media platform to be. Because let's take a step back 3 years ago and beyond. We would have considered social media, by and large, to have been Instagram, Twitter, WeChat, Facebook, obviously, and the like things that are predominantly public platforms for mass consumption. A lot happened in that time, both political and otherwise, to the point that some people, myself included, have really withdrawn quite significantly from social media. You know, I don't tweet anymore. The only thing I put on Instagram is drum videos, and that seems to be about once every 3 months. I'm not on Facebook, and so on and so forth. But I don't feel antisocial, because what I've realized I found the biggest value in are platforms like Signal groups, and particularly Discord and various Discord servers. Obviously, we use that for text message. We have a great community for any and all of our patrons.
It's very enjoyable.
But also ones for certain other podcasts. DTNS has a really cool Discord that I'm more of a lurker in than anything else. And then several for gaming guilds that I have. And I found that kind of semi-private approach to social networking is actually much more valuable to me, because it's quite specific to the topics that I want to talk about, which otherwise social media isn't. It tends to be quite personal, quite broadcasty. And I also get more from it because of the specificity, if that's the right term, of some of the servers and channels that I join, which is why I've been also quite curious about Mastodon, which is very Twitter-like.
Have you tried Mastodon?
No, this is the thing. I've only this week started looking into it. I had to edit one of the reporters wrote about it, and basically had written about some of the alternatives to Twitter, both things like Parler and Trump's Truth Social, things like that, but also stuff like Mastodon and even Tumblr, which I didn't realize is really pushing to make a bit of a comeback in the wake of what's been happening with Twitter. So it's really been quite interesting just to think about if this is a reflection point of where value in social media lies. I actually answered my own question in advance by moving a lot of people into things like Signal and Discord, and not feeling like I was missing out. And I think that's why. And I wondered if your opinion is similar, because you're still quite active and angry on Twitter.
Yeah, you summed that up. Much less angry on Mastodon, which is interesting. Mastodon, I mean, I think part of the thing is Twitter encourages rage, I feel. But actually, for a very long time, I've been feeling like Twitter is leaving me feeling quite, what's the word I want to use here?
Deflated?
Bereft. Yes, that's it. I mean, so for example, I was looking at Twitter this morning, and it was, you know, there were a couple of things, and I saw a couple of replies to tweets, and I was just like, this is just so annoying. Like, I'm really just annoyed by this, and I can't, there's nothing I can say. Like, there are people on Twitter who are just wrong. They're not, you know, wrong in my opinion. They're objectively wrong.
Yeah.
And what's the point in even bothering to correct these people? Half of them are idiots, and half of them are disingenuous. And it's just infuriating. And I actually believe that Twitter, in fact, I would say Twitter does two things. Twitter very effectively mirrors my general mood. So if I was going to be, if you watch me on Twitter, you'll probably be able to tell what sort of mood I'm in quite easily, for one thing. And secondly, I think it has a massive influence on it. You can't escape. If you're on Twitter all day, or not all day, but, you know, you check Twitter on or off all day, you just can't escape from the news. And I feel like that's part of a problem. Now, Mastodon, on the other hand, is kind of different in that you have some options. So, for example, you could pick a server for Mastodon that really reflected who you are. So you could go for something that was like, you could pick, like, maybe there's a podcasting one, or that, you know, maybe there's a drummer's or musician's Mastodon. I'm sure there were both.
There's also a great band called Mastodon.
There is. You could go with the Mastodon. And then, so what you would have then is you wouldn't necessarily have to use it, but if you looked at just the tweet, the toots on that server, you would then see, like, just people like you talking about things that you're interested in. And you could have an experience on that platform. You wouldn't necessarily need to say anything. It wouldn't necessarily be about news. It wouldn't be current events. And if it was, it might be hidden behind a content warning, because the Mastodon community is very quite careful about not, like, they tried to keep everything that people don't want to see behind a sort of a warning as such. You can turn that off if you want to see everything. But it's more, I think it's a more considerate social network. But the thing that interests me deeply about Mastodon, and the thing that makes me wonder about what's next for the internet and social media as a whole, is, in a way, ties into Web3, which I hate to say, because I find Web3 to be truly irksome at the moment. But the idea of services operating on a platform, but kind of above it. So Mastodon, you could, you know, make your own server, do your own thing. You could have your own app. There wouldn't be anything to stop someone like Microsoft coming along, for example, and launching its own kind of service on the top of Mastodon. Like, you could use the protocol and all that kind of thing, and they could build an entire community, you know, on the top. And I don't think there would be anything to stop them from monetizing that if they wanted to. You know, it's interesting. I feel like, is this what's next? Is it, do we now accept the fact that the social media companies have way too much power, and that they need to be removed in a way? The content and the platform need to be separated from each other. And is that perhaps the future of usable social media? Well, who's going to pay for it? And that's the question.
It might be. I mean, I think people end up paying for apps. I mean, I've certainly paid more money to third-party Twitter app developers than to Twitter itself ever. You know, I bought Tweetbot in various forms back in the day. I would use Twitterific or Tweety or any of these other ones. Goodness knows how many I bought over the years. But it was always to those people that I would give the money, and Twitter was just the plumbing underneath.
But interesting question. I wonder if Elon will change that again, because one of the problems obviously with Twitter was it shut down its commercially accessible API. Elon reopen that and make it usable again? Who knows?
Well, it's possible. But the broader question here isn't strictly speaking about how something like Mastodon works. It's more that, does it fulfill a need that is now left vacant by all the changes in big social media? And even if so, is it something that we want to actually be a part of? Because I've never felt less social in many ways.
Yes.
You know, I have a better relationship with a smaller group of people I like a lot.
Yeah.
Using a blend of things like Signal and Discord and various other tools, rather than one big spam everything to everyone platform.
Yes.
And not,
I get what you're saying, and I know that works for you. But I'm interested because one of the sad things about you not being on Twitter is that I liked hearing from you. But it's difficult because you have to balance these days your professional reputation and what you say on Twitter. And not that I'm saying that you would say anything outrageous, but even so, it places an emphasis on being so careful that you're sort of like, well, do I want to say that? Could that be construed as something? I tried to make this point about verification and the idea that being verified should mean that you at least take some responsibility for what you're saying, and you try your hardest not to mislead people. Of course, that's all gone out of the window now, although verification has been suspended again. But, like, I don't know. I feel like I get the best out of you on Signal, but I miss public Nate in a way. Do you understand what I'm saying? I know it's ridiculous.
I do understand what you mean, but I'll be honest, I don't miss public Nate.
Yeah, I know what you mean, though, because I feel the same way about public Ian. He's a dick.
Yeah, public Nate. I mean, back when I tweeted a lot, there was always the fact that I used to drink quite a lot. Let's just say a young, arrogant, slightly inebriated Nate on Twitter is not a Nate that I particularly want to ever be again. And indeed,
agree.
Shan't.
I mean, not with you particularly, but
Yeah, but there's that need to be heard, and I don't feel the need to be heard in that sense.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Do you think that maybe because you now have a, I mean, this isn't necessarily because it wasn't true at CNET, but because we did have a good voice at CNET. Like, we were the site, really, weren't we?
Yeah.
In those days of, you know, .co.uk being a distinctive brand.
Yeah.
You know, and now you obviously have a big job at, you know, a big company, and you have an audience. I mean, maybe not, I don't know, it's different, but maybe that bit doesn't need to be scratched anymore. Does that make any sense?
I think maybe if we didn't have the podcast, maybe it'd be different.
That is true. We do have the podcast.
I've not even thought about it in that context, but we have the podcast, and we're very careful on the podcast not to breach whatever kind of rules that may or may not be set for us by our employers. And we keep professional, and we try to stick to things we know about. But maybe that's part of it. Maybe if text message didn't exist, you and I would be frequent tweeters still, or
maybe,
or
Mastodonians.
Mastodonians.
I don't know. Tooters.
Oh God, there is.
Yeah, the name does not work.
There's a great chat going on in our Discord. I can see Rich and Russ, Nick, and John chatting quite a lot about the benefits of it. And Mastodon does seem to be something that appeals to people like us, but that was the way of Twitter in the early days.
It was for
nerds. I kind of feel the tipping point was when Oprah Winfrey and Barack Obama joined, and then it flipped from being a thing for nerds and tech journalists and bloggers to the every person's thing, to being the kind of catch-all for customer service that it is, or at least was before the last couple of weeks, you know, that it became to be.
Well, this is my argument, and it's an argument that you can make about podcasting as well, in that, you know, these things start off as middle class white people doing their thing, because people do mock podcasters because it's such a white man thing to do, and I get it, and it makes me laugh. But what, you know, but ultimately we're not doing it because, you know, we think we're more important than everyone else. We do this show because we like talking to each other. We have fun doing it. We have our own opinion about tech and we've evolved into something that's a little bit different. Like, you know, we're not doing regular tech show. But then you get the celebrities that come along, and they always distort every platform. You know, they ruin everything. And yes, that will happen. You know, I mean, Stephen Fry went to Mastodon and presumably immediately got a million followers. And, you know, that's not the experience most people have. You know, those guys can go anywhere and that people will follow them there. And I do feel like, yes, you're right. The early days of Twitter, the early days of Mastodon, that were maybe, I mean, it's been around ages. I first joined it years and years ago, and my original server's now gone and has been replaced by a porn site, believe it or not. So I'm not joking. So it's one of these things, isn't it? Like, if you get him early enough on, what am I even trying to say? You get a very different experience. So that's interesting. And I guess also it's not algorithmically driven. Twitter, on the other hand, is pushing more towards that. And I've become alarmed recently because part of what Musk was saying was that if you aren't verified, your content will be suppressed. Now, I don't use the algorithmic timeline on Twitter. I use chronological. But I have this feeling that chronological option will go away because it doesn't exist on Instagram and it doesn't exist on Facebook and it probably doesn't exist anywhere. Twitter's unique in that it still offers it, but it isn't the default. If you're using Twitter as a novice and you don't know that that's an option, you're seeing what an algorithm thinks you should see, and that means that people can be suppressed. Obviously, Mastodon just doesn't have that functionality. There is no algorithm. You see it in chronological order, and that's it. And you only see things from people you follow on the whole, and things that are shared by people you follow. So it's a very different experience. And obviously, Mastodon will never be an algorithm because that's just not what they're about. So is it a rebellion about algorithms? I mean, in a way, I guess, but how do we survive without algorithms? It's very difficult practically.
Well, you mentioned suppression. I think it's time to suppress this discussion and make a decision about whether all the changes in social media have made us reevaluate our opinion on being on social media to the extent that we want to partake in some of these newer breeds, some of these public-private hybrids like Discord, perhaps like Mastodon. Who knows? But if you have an opinion on this, do let us know via the usual method, which is to send us an email, an electronic mail, to hello@uktechshow.com.
You know, moving on from the no news this week, here's what I found, mate. Netflix is going to stream a Chris Rock performance live.
Oh, imagine I like that. Chris. I like Chris Rock.
Well, I like Chris Rock. He's a very funny man. It's going to be very entertaining, I'm sure. But it does feel a little bit like we've reinvented TV again. You know, Netflix isn't the first streaming company to do live TV. Amazon does it for sport quite a bit. And US streamer Hulu and YouTube even offer services similar to cable TV that are, you know, streamed over the internet. And, of course, we've got Skyglass doing that exact thing. So my question to you really is it perhaps true that live TV was better than everyone thought? And actually what we crave is someone to pick things for us to watch.
Possibly. I think we may touch on something here that we didn't actually plan on talking about, but I just remembered reading that the new series of The Crown on Netflix was the first one that we got to see ratings for, as in Barb ratings. Ah. And the new season was watched by 1.1 million people on its first day. But I also read that the final episode was watched by something like 200 in the first day, like 200 people. And just showed that there were like 200 people in the UK who binged The Crown from beginning to end in one day.
A single day.
And it raised a question about the value of live, because the celebrity jungle experience show was also out on that day, I think, and had way more people watching it. The difference being that the live one had immediate value and very little long tail, whereas The Crown, if it picks up a million in day one, it's still going to be there in a year and will still pick up lots and lots of people on the way. But
I hate to almost professionally tie this back into the previous conversation, but that live TV thing is relevant because it is a social media event.
Well, that's true, but so is The Crown.
And that's what drives I'm a Celebrity. I'm sorry, I wasn't supposed to name it. But yes, well, The Crown is, but you can't talk about it on social media because people aren't watching it at the same time. And they're watching it, as you've just pointed out, at completely different cadences.
Yes, that is also true. Well, that's a point. So in that case, a Chris Rock special, I mean, he's a comedian, so I assume it's a stand-up comedy show.
It is, yeah.
It falls into neither category in that sense, because it's not, because it is long tail. It does have long term value.
Yes.
But it's being streamed live, but it's not something where you would need, where spoilers would really ruin it, because you don't know who's been voted off. Presumably he's not voting ex members of parliament out of jungles. He's probably making fairly informed, intelligent, sophisticated jokes about...
That's what I would understand based on my understanding of him, yeah. Yes?
So...
It still will have people watching it live, talking about it as it's happening kind of vibe. Yeah, sure. There's no sort of actions to talk about, but it will be something, you know, potentially that people will talk about together. You know, Eurovision's the same. I mean, obviously, that's different because there's voting. But you know what I mean? Like, people like to talk, and this goes back to the original conversation. Why does social media even exist? Well, it's because people like to talk, and they like to talk about things that are happening. And most of the time in society, the things that are happening are awful. So watching a bit of enjoyable TV, ITV's managed to nail this, because not only has it managed to produce an awful show, but it's also managed to invite someone awful on it that reminds everyone about all the awful things he did,
which is
brilliant.
Awfully lucrative, it seems.
Yes, and it's done extremely well on social media and is obviously very popular on the channel. But I'm fascinated by only a million people watching The Crown. That's not a lot.
But that's in the UK on day
one. Yeah, but that's I know, but that's not a lot.
I mean, I think most people would be pretty happy these days with a million people in one country watching the first episode.
What does Doctor Who get?
Doctor Who probably,
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, Doctor Who probably does get more, but Doctor Who's also airing on a free-to-air TV channel. I mean, all right, yes, you need a license fee, but let's be honest, you don't have to. It's not paywalled like Netflix is. And I thought that was interesting. I mean, the Netflix thing is, it will be commercially driven, because, and I mean that in sense of, it's done in a way to make more money, to diversify. We've seen that with it launching ads. But it's doing it in a way that reminds me of how it did things when it started doing originals back in the day, and things like House of Cards and Orange is the New Black, where it was big budget, initially geared quite to a US audience, I think, but was available worldwide. But it became its next big thing. It became what Netflix is actually known for. Because before those originals took off, Netflix, at least in Britain, was the bargain bin outside the almost out of business video rental store. Like, you went to Netflix not knowing what you wanted to watch, because you knew that nothing you wanted to watch would be there, but you might find something that you did want to watch because its algorithm was quite good at suggesting it. But you could never want to watch something and go to Netflix to find it, whereas now you very much can. But it's also been augmented by hugely successful TV shows. Your opening question in our script, have we just reinvented TV? I wouldn't put it past Netflix having done so. I really do. There is so much commercial value in live. And if you've got the budget to pull in names like Chris Rock, or you imagine bringing back a live... I mean, imagine if Netflix did... not Strictly Come Dancing, but if something
of that ilk.
Of that ilk. That, you know, so, or something like I'm a Celebrity, but with the kind of budget that they would do. I mean, it would be a very different presentation.
I was going to say, turn Squid Game real.
I mean, and bring the same people on it, because that would be brilliant. If you get all the dregs of Celebrity into a jungle, knowing that most of them were going to get shot before the series had run its course. I mean, that is, let's be honest, that would be compelling viewing. I'm not saying I want it to happen, but it would be, I mean, it'd get people talking on, on Mastodon.
It certainly would. I mean, and to some extent, I sort of agree, because I struggle sometimes, and I've put this in the script, because there are the amount of times I sit down and think, well, I'll watch something on Netflix, and then have to sort of scroll through endless sort of poster art for different things and not make a decision about it. Sometimes maybe live TV is the answer, and if Netflix can sort of pick a bunch of stuff that, you know, if it could put together a really good primetime schedule for like 8 to 10 o'clock or something, where, you know, shows were debuted, I could potentially see myself tuning in and go, you know what, it's easier, it's on tonight, I'll watch it at 8, then I've seen it, kind of thing. Do you see what I mean?
I know
it's ridiculous.
No, it's not ridiculous. You've jogged my memory about a feature that my media server here has at home, which is that you can basically play your entire media library on shuffle and have it unending. So anytime you switch it on, you'll just be in the middle of one of any of the TV shows or movies that you own partway through.
Yeah, which is good. So like for Friends, that's perfect, isn't it?
Yeah. But it may just as equally be Wife Swap.
Yeah. Well, that works as well.
Or it may be anything else. You never know.
And I mean, bearing in mind, a lot of those shows are designed for exactly that. You know, like you can theoretically tune into Four in a Bed or whatever it's called at any point during it, but the best time to watch it is when it's on Sunday and you get to see the whole thing.
Do you know there's something called, is it decision paralysis or option? I know, option paralysis was the name of an album by Dillinger Escape Plan, but I think it might be a real thing. Basically, the more choices you have for something, the harder it is to make a decision. And it's kind of the Apple model to a certain extent, or at least was. Like, release one very good thing and everyone will go and buy it. And actually having a live experience where lots of things that you like are just perpetually being looped at random means you're always going to be watching something that you probably like. but it's taking away the decision. You know, it's why shuffle mode on music albums is music libraries is quite good. You never know what's just going to appear that you'd forgotten about.
Unless you're Adele, in which case they're Satan.
Let's not get into Adele again. we've had that view, I think. I didn't like
previously
it.
Mentioned.
Previously mentioned.
Doctor Who got, last episode of Doctor Who got 5.3 million.
All right. I mean, yeah, fair point. That is big. I mean,
it's just interesting. I just think it's interesting because, you know, Netflix hasn't published ratings before. And as you said, they're only UK. I'm sure The Crown was watched by probably, you know, 100 million people worldwide. But it's interesting that in the UK, which is a comparable audience for, say, Doctor Who, it wasn't actually a lot of people. But that's not to say, but you know, everyone will have watched it in the week or whatever, so it will do well. I just think, you know, it's an interesting statistic.
Yeah, it really is. Well, let us know if you have any thoughts on whether live is the new, well, live
on demand.
Yeah. Maybe there's a good model that somebody's got out there that they have been enjoying in another country or elsewhere. You can let us know. Let Ian know specifically, because then he'll tell me. By sending us an email to... Do you want to take the email, Ian?
Hello at uktechshow.com.
Oh.
You win.
Well done, mate. Have you heard of somebody called Bo Hansen, Ian?
No.
He's a genius. Or she's a genius.
Who is he?
One of our latest patrons.
What?
So thank you, Bo Hansen, for joining us and being amazing person. Amazing person.
Yeah. I can't say enough good things about Bo Hansen.
Yeah. I also wanted to flag a tweet that came in from Adam Lowe, who was listening to episode 289. We were talking quite in depth about fax machines. And I have to say, I'm particularly proud of that episode. I thought we did a bang-up job talking about the fax. I thought we got the facts correct. And I thought the facts was done a justice. Anyway, Adam says, my partner worked at a chain jewellery store, won't name for obvious reasons, and left approximately a year ago. They are, /were, still using fax for communications to all 200-plus shops, even during COVID.
Wow. Can you do a broadcast fax? Is that something?
A broadcast fax?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, if you had like a morning bulletin that you wanted to send to your shops... Is it possible to somehow send them out all at once? No, I guess it isn't. How would you do that? It wouldn't work, would it? It'd
be quite difficult. But interesting.
Very difficult.
Interesting to know that it's not just hospitals and other public institutions. It's also rife in the jewellery sector. Crazy stuff. Well,
yeah, it is.
Other crazy stuff's been happening in the wider world of technology, of course, this week. And we've glossed over some of the biggest stories, but I'll tell you someone who hasn't. His name's Tom Merritt. Here he is to prove us right. Correct.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, why that weird software error might be due to a cosmic ray flipping a bit in your computer chip. I mean, it probably isn't, but it might be. Is TikTok's appeal limited to the phone, and can it hypnotize you while you're there? Apple is collecting some data even when you tell it not to, and we can't figure out why. And if you heard about the crypto exchange FTX collapsing, we explain the whole thing in a way the layman can understand. And yeah, we talked about Twitter some, but usually by the time we finished a sentence about it, things had changed and the sentence was no longer relevant, so we kept it to a minimum. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
And that happened to us.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
It happened to us as well last week, so no one's immune. It's a fast-moving beast, like a cheetah or any animal falling from a great height. Thank you very much, Tom. DailyTechNewsShow.com. I have to say, I've been following the FTX stuff absolutely with a keen eye. I think it's a fascinating turn of events. Some great stories. Obviously, some fantastic stories on Bloomberg.com. But also a great explanation in audible form from Tom Merritt. Go and listen to that. Ian, I have nothing else to say to you.
No, and I have nothing else to say to you either after a week of really just quite tedious news, although it has been hilarious on Twitter. I mean, if you're not on it, just go and check out some of the hilarity.
Bye, everyone.
Hey, Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.